Can you say
that?
Yes. Okay. Good morning, friends and fellows. My name is Kim, and I am a compulsive overeater. Happy to be here recovering from the deadly disease of compulsive overeating with all of you this morning, and grateful to be an abstinent member of this fellowship. And I never want there to be a day that I take my abstinence for granted, because my life in the food out there was hell for 45 years, and I'm grateful to be sitting here with 12 years of abstinence. My abstinence date is November 13th of 2010, and I'm down 80-some pounds from my top weight. I actually don't know what my top weight was. I, you know, was oozing out of my stretchy size 20s, and I didn't get on the scale anymore because I didn't. It didn't make reality go away, but I did not want to know what that number was. And my weight has fluctuated a little bit in program. I'm at my original goal weight right now. I got thin for a while. Oh, thin. I have never, ever been thin. And, I mean, I was 15 or 20 pounds thinner than this. And my doctor said, "You're looking a little sucked up." And I was like, "Screw him." And my friends were asking me if I was sick, if I was okay. And I was like, "They're just jealous." And then was my higher power for a while. And if I don't stay in fit spiritual condition, then can be my higher power again. I liked it. I liked it a little too much. But I have an addictive brain and a compulsive personality. So food was my first addiction and compulsion. And then I added everything else you can possibly imagine to that list throughout my lifetime. But my mom said, even as an infant, I was a premature baby, and she would feed me, and she would have to physically stop feeding me. Like, I didn't have an off button with food. And I didn't until I worked the steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And I worked the steps in another program for 10 years. And I was as connected with God as I could be with a bag of Doritos and a bag of M&Ms between my legs sitting in my lap. I was high on food or coming down from food in a bitchy mood all the time. And my bottom line abstinence is no sweets. Anything that looks like dessert is none of my business. And I have people say, "Well, do you eat, you know, fat-free, sugar-free, frozen yogurt?" No, because I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't trigger me, but what if it did? Like, is it worth taking the risk? And the truth is I don't want non-dairy tofu-based frozen dessert product. You know what I want. I want the good stuff, the real thing. And I don't eat chips and crackers, anything salty, greasy, cheesy, in a box or a bag. I mourn when I get to the bottom. Like, they're gone. They're all gone. Like, I always think I would have, like, cherished that last one a little more if I would have realized it was the last one. Like, I do not have a normal relationship with food. And my compulsive overeating and dieting, and I didn't know exercise bulimia was even a thing until I got here. I didn't know that I was a restrictor by white-knuckling my way through every diet on the planet. And I literally, like, if you are still researching, just stop and ask me, because I have literally done everything. I was at goal weight 6 times at Weight Watchers and got pissed that they wouldn't give me a gold star again every time I lost it again. I thought if I was a Weight Watchers leader, then it would be my job, so I would have to keep the weight off. No. I did the Body for Life body transformation competition, lost 38 pounds in 12 weeks. Spray tanned my body, took my after pictures, and gained 18 pounds in 2 weeks, binging on everything I had deprived myself of during. And Body for Life, it's 6 days on program, and then you get a cheat day. Like, you can't give me a cheat day. Like, my trainer was like, "I don't understand why you're not losing more weight, but if you eat a whole large pizza and a whole gallon of ice cream on your cheat day, if you eat 10,000 calories on your cheat day." And my cheat days turn into cheat weeks and cheat months and cheat years. And I yo-yo dieted up and down First, it was 30 or 40 pounds when I was younger. And by the time I got here, in sobriety, I was gaining and losing 60 or 80 pounds every other year for the first 10 years, you know, in the other program. And I believe from the bottom of my heart that we have to take every single compulsive bite. We have to do every demoralizing diet, potion, pill, protein. I had to do every insane, harmful thing I did around food and food behaviors before I was willing to come to Overeaters Anonymous and surrender my will, my life, and my food to God, as I understand God, because I had surrendered really everything else in my life except food. And there's some part of my ego that thinks this is just food. Like, I should be able to, if everybody eat, like, just give me the right diet plan, give me the right exercise program, and I can do this. And I proved over and over again, I'm a great dieter. I can get to goal weight on any diet, and then I can gain it back so fast that your head will spin. And I couldn't do it on my own. I couldn't do it with a spiritual program. My sponsor in the other program surrendered her red vines and her sugar thing in the other program and has never had an urge since. And it pisses me off because that's not my story. I would pray every night, God, please remove the obsession to binge eat. And then I'd go to the kitchen and binge eat. Like, I didn't mean it. Until I came here and met you, my people, my fellows, my family, who get me when it comes. I even have friends in the other program that'll be like, well, just have one cookie. And I'm like, are you serious? Other people don't have to get it. I was waiting for other people to get it, and they don't have to get it. You get it. You know me better than anyone else on the planet knows me. I'm in a lot of fear right now. You know, I'm looking for work, and my industry's on fire, and I'm applying for jobs in communications and sales and marketing and educator liaison and talent recruiter and medicine. Like, I applied for a restaurant job in Beverly Hills yesterday, and my ego didn't like it, but you all have taught me to just take the next right action and be willing. And, like, I'm in a lot of financial fear, future tripping, and I haven't wanted to binge eat. Like, for me, that is, like, when people say, oh, I was so stressed out I couldn't eat for days, I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Because my whole history has been, oh my God, this is an overwhelming emotion. I better put something addictive in my mouth to soothe it and push it down. And to not have to do that today is remarkable, and learning to take the next right action in this program is remarkable. And I had to work the steps of Overeaters Anonymous around, specifically around my relationship with food, addictive foods, and food behaviors that were part of my brain chemistry and wiring and makeup since I was a little kid. And it was scary. It was intimidating. Like, if you don't know what you're eating over, put the food down and you start to figure it out pretty quick. It's like, oh, and like all the emotion, I was laughing at inappropriate times, you know, and I was pissed off about everything. I got too hungry yesterday. I met some people for an event to celebrate a friend being in the Hollywood Museum. It was cool. But the one that organized it was late, and then he was late, and then it's 2:30, and I haven't eaten lunch, and they're talking about going to Mel's. There's nothing on Mel's that I need to have for lunch. But one of my friends looked at me and was like, wow, I've never seen, you seem kind of short. And I'm like, I am a little short. Like, hangry Kim. You know, you guys taught me not to get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And those things are still code red for me 12 years into my abstinence. And I had to work the steps around my compulsive overeating and food behaviors. And what I learned was that a lot of what I was eating over was childhood trauma and a lot of pain that I didn't know how to process. I was a little kid. How the how was I supposed to know how to process it? And I stopped harming other people in the world working the steps in my other program. I stopped wreaking havoc on society in general working the steps in the other program. And I stopped harming me working the steps in Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm not saying I didn't harm other people when I was hangry, because I did. I mean, my number one amends was to my ex-fiance. You know, like, I gained 60 or 80 pounds in the time that we were dating, and he still thought I was beautiful, and I'd be like, don't touch me, get away from me. And I really pushed him away. So I did owe people amends. I owed more people amends for eating their food. Including my little niece, who was 3 years old at the time, you know. Aunt Kimmy, I want to cheese it. Oh, Aunt Kimmy ate them all again, and every snack cake and everything in the pantry. But I had to take a look. When I got to Overeaters Anonymous, before I worked the steps in this program, I would be in the bathroom looking in the mirror saying, you fat bitch, you're disgusting. What is wrong with... I would say that to myself. I would never say that to you. I would never treat another human being the way I treated myself in the disease of compulsive overeating. And, you know, a lot of my inventory and a lot of my amends were living amends to myself. And I've heard people share from the podium that they were struck abstinent, that I was struck abstinent and I never had another compulsive bite or I never had another compulsive food thought. And that has not been my experience. I still have the brain of a compulsive overeater, set for self-destruction any time I want to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels and think I've got this. I don't got this. I will never have this without your help and support. And one next right action at a time, I learned how to live abstinently in recovery. And one meal at a time. Have I eaten a snack because the guy didn't call, or, you know, my meal was a little sexier, or my portion was a little bigger because I didn't get the job and I'm sad? Yes. Is that always a part of my story? No, it's not very often at all, as a matter of fact. But I just want to say that because I want you to know there is no perfect. I mean, not breaking my bottom line abstinence is as perfect as I can get in Overeaters Anonymous. And I qualify for anything that ends in A. Like, that's the truth. And this program takes a different level of honesty than any of the other programs. I don't have to figure out if I can have a 5% beer, a 3.5% beer, or a near beer. But I have to be completely honest about what foods and food behaviors trigger my disease, the craving, the obsession that makes me unable to stop. And in this program, for me, I don't know about you, it can change. Like, my bottom line abstinence is no sugar and no crunchy, salty, chip, you know, snacky things. But there are weeks and months that I can have a jar of almond butter in the pantry and have it, you know, on a rice cake as a snack every few days. And then there are times when it's like, oh, it's almost time for my snack. I'm going to have... And as soon as anything becomes that sexy or important, I just go downstairs and throw it in the dumpster because I don't want it taking up all that room in my head, and I don't want to battle with it because I'm going to freaking lose every time. And I have friends who've gone out. I think all of my friends who've relapsed have gone out and eaten the way I eat, gained 100 pounds in 4 months. That would be my story. That would absolutely be my story. I wouldn't be like, oh, I had, you know, a piece of cake at the wedding, now I'm back. That would not be, that's not the way I roll with food. Like, if the craving, the obsession is activated, I'm in big trouble. Being overweight was my excuse for everything in my life. The guy didn't want to date me because I was fat, or I didn't get the job because they're fat shamers. And I'm not saying there's a lot of fat shame in our society, for sure. But I also showed up with that energy, like, F you, you're judging me. You hate me, you think I'm gross. that was me looking in the mirror, talking to myself. It wasn't about what everybody else was doing or thinking or saying. And I'm so grateful that working the steps in Overeaters Anonymous and living by the principles of Overeaters Anonymous, I get to learn how to treat myself with the kindness and love and respect that I treated you with long before I got here. And I love the idea of not an option. People quiz me all the time about what I eat and don't eat. If it's not an option, it's not a problem. That is so much easier than negotiating with food for me. Like, is it an option today? I don't know. Maybe I should take that off my abstinence. Maybe I should just do what's been working with, you know, for me for 12 years. Guiding other women through the steps of Overeaters Anonymous is such a privilege and a pleasure, because this is the most vulnerable, terrifying part of who I am and what I don't love about myself. And so to share it with you and be vulnerable about it and be transparent about... I led a step two meeting this week, and I love our OA literature. I love that, you know, step two, it says I ate spoiled food. I'd be like, have a block of cheese and be cutting the mold. Well, I cut the mold off, you know, or I'd be digging the cookies out of the trash that I put in the trash, blowing coffee grounds off, saying, well, it was in plastic. It's not like it was in the trash. Like, I thought I was the only one who did totally demoralizing things like that with food, and I'm not. I read that step two, and I know that I'm in the right place. I know that you're my people, and I know that that I'm in the right place. And, you know, not having the excuse of my weight for why I was standing in my own way in my life puts me in another position where I have more work to do to step into the life that God intends for me to have. You know, I was a singer growing up, and I wanted to be on stage, but I didn't want anybody looking at me and judging me, so I punished myself by never performing. And in abstinence, being food sober, I can walk through the fear. Like, people say that you can't feel fear and faith at the same time, and I'm like, oh, I bullshit. I do that all day, every day. Like, what the difference is I can be in fear and take the next right action anyway with your love and support. And, you know, my mom died of ALS about 5 years ago, and I got to go home and be fully present and take care of her the way she took care of me my whole life. And then I had this moment of clarity there where I've been afraid. I always wanted to do stand-up comedy. I've written notes for 20 years. I was like, that ALS shit is scary. Like, that is terrifying. It's the most terrifying thing I've ever seen. I'm like, what am I afraid of? Someone won't like me. Someone won't think I'm funny. Someone will think I'm too old. So I spent my whole life caring what everybody else thought of me and never considered what I wanted in my life or who I wanted in my life. I took the job I was offered because, well, I guess it's a job and it's good. I dated the guy, but, oh, you think I'm pretty? Okay, let's date. Like, I never considered what I wanted in my life. And in recovery from compulsive overeating, like, I think just putting the fork down, thank you, putting the fork down is just the very beginning of all of the great things that are going to happen. And the truth is, I came here to lose weight and figure out how to keep weight off. I came here to see what diet you were going to put me on and how I could get my weight off. And my sponsor kept saying, work the spiritual program of action and your weight and your relationship with food will follow. And I was like, no, what do I eat? What's my food plan? Like, how many times a day can I exercise? You say I have exercise bulimia. Can I work out every day? Like, I wanted the plan. And the plan is working the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. The plan is peeling away the old ideas and behaviors and bullshit that I believed my whole life that isn't my truth, one layer at a time. I mean, this is not for the faint of heart. If living obese and hating myself wasn't harder than this, I never would have been here doing this work. Like, I am here because I literally felt dead on the inside. My soul was dying. And I defended compulsive overeating for a long time. Excuse me. I used to joke. I'm like, I gave up, you know, vodka tonics, cocaine, sport fucking, spree sending, chain smoking, putting cruises on credit cards. Now you want me to give up cupcakes? Like, I don't know who I thought they were that I, you know, wanted to make me give up whatever I thought I needed to give up. But it was me. The battle was with me. And I had to do what I had to do over and over again until I got here and was willing to work the steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And it's funny, not funny, this week, though. But, you know, I've been in fear about work, and I've been applying for all these jobs and waiting to hear. I think this is like the sixth meeting I've led in the last 2 weeks, and someone just emailed me to lead next Saturday in Oak Park. I've been in Santa Monica. I'm here. I'm in Oak Park. I've been online. God's like, all right, Trixie, out of self into service. And that works for me. That works for me because I get to remember that my primary purpose is to stay abstinent and help another compulsive overeater, you know, get abstinent. And drugs and alcohol were going to kill me fast. Like, I was at a jumping off place there that was going to kill me fast. Food addiction and self-hatred could take decades to kill me. I have an uncle who died last year, 87 years old, at 550 pounds. His knees, one of his knees just shattered under him, and he fell to the floor, and they had to bring 11 people to get him to the hospital. Then he got an infection in ICU that took him out. He had a strong heart at 87 and 550 pounds. So I know my genes are solid stock. Like, I could live really miserably for a really long time if I wanted to go back out there. That sounds so ridiculous, but I'm not afraid to die of this disease, and I've watched people I love die of this disease. I am afraid to stay alive and live actively in compulsive overeating because it is the most soul-sucking, heinous, awful thing that I've been. When I was out there in the world, like, not everyone knew I was doing blow and drinking my ass off and smoking and dating bad boys and spending money I didn't have. Everybody who looked at me knew I was out of control with food. And there's like that extra layer of shame with compulsive overeating, even beyond all of my other addictions and compulsions. And there is a level of love and acceptance in Overeaters Anonymous that I don't even see in other 12-step programs. Like, we love each other until we love ourselves. Are you abstinent today? Awesome. Are you in the food today struggling? Stay. Are you obese? Are you starving yourself to death? Are you throwing up? We don't care. We love you. Stay here. I've tried everything out there. If you've got questions about it, ask me. Like, the recovery is in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. And I came here thinking, I don't want to be sick enough to need two programs. Now I'm in three. Because I want to be that free. Like, it's not about how sick I am. It's how free do I want to live my life. And I get to live the life I have today because you all gave me the gift of Overeaters Anonymous. Thank you for letting me share. After the seventh tradition is read, this is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. Oh, wow. If you need to share, please do so with one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not that of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. And I will restate the questions and follow directions from this point forward. All right. who would like to ask a question? Jen?
Hi. Your relationship with God, how it has been, if it has changed, and how it is now. Where is God?
Where is God in my program? I had a relationship with God before I got here, but it was still a tentative punishing relationship based on the religion I was brought up in. I just had one of my cousins, my mom's cousins, I called, like, corner me about worrying about me burning in hell this week, and that's like the third relative that's done that in the last couple of years. And it's the first time I stood up for myself. I said, Deanna, I love you and I believe that you believe that, but I don't believe 600 million Christians are going to heaven and 6.5 billion of the rest of us who are spiritual, Jewish, Muslim, Catholic are going to burn in hell. Like, I don't believe that. So it felt good to just live in my truth. And my relationship with my higher power has fluctuated in recovery. To me, God is that connection between us. Love, joy, music, beauty, children, animals, laughter, recovery. Just that energy, that love, that feeling of connection. And I love that we get to define our own higher power in this program. I've heard people say, oh, someone said their doorknob. Well, good. Then pray to the doorknob, and if it kept you abstinent today, that's freaking awesome. Like, we get to decide. And I feel I've been mad at God. God can take it, you know? If there's this higher power of the universe, I can throw a tantrum. It's all going to be okay. So it has definitely changed, but you all are my channel. I connect with you, and my channel opens to connect with my higher power every single time, for sure. Yes?
Hi, thank you so much. You talked about how your sponsor said working a spiritual program would lead you to your abstinence. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened?
The question is, you said your sponsor told you to work the spiritual program of action and action to lead you to your abstinence. And actually, I had to be abstinent from my alcoholic foods to do the spiritual program of action. I couldn't work the steps of Overeaters Anonymous with a 2-pound bag of M&Ms between my knees. I couldn't be high and do the work I needed to do. What she said was, do the step work. It had to start with being abstinent from I was still crazy all over the place, but I had to put down the alcoholic foods to do the work. And then working the steps with a sponsor. I had worked the steps before, but to admit I knew nothing about recovery from compulsive overeating and food addiction, and to just be as willing as the dying can be from the beginning was an amazing experience. And I just had to follow the sponsor direction. I like to work the steps the first time with people I sponsor out of the OA 12 and 12 and the 12 and 12 workbook because it's in modern language and it's totally specific to alcoholic food behaviors and alcoholic foods. And then I'll take them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I had to put down the alcoholic foods, do the work, and then it did. Like, I was eating pretty big portions and lost my first 65 pounds. But I also wasn't face down in the bakery case at Porto's twice a week, you know, having a big sugar binge. So I did what she said, and that worked. My relationship with food changed. The alcoholic food behaviors started to wane, and I got more connected with my higher power.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your share. You said that you weren't struck abstinent, which I also love to hear. Can you explain, you sort of did some of it there, can you explain how that developed then? How did you start your abstinence, and then how has that developed over time?
Sure, absolutely. The question is, I wasn't struck abstinent, how did I develop my abstinence over time? So, when I got abstinent, I knew I had to surrender my alcoholic foods. I knew, like, the sweets and the chips and crackers. Like, if I have one, I have 1,000. I can't stop. And I had to put those down. And I was kicking and screaming. I was pissed. I didn't like it. It was too many feelings. And I just had to not eat those foods no matter what. Make a phone call, whatever I had to do. But I know a lot of people probably got rid of the craving and obsession faster than I was, but I'm a willful girl. So, I mean, it takes what it takes. In the other program, I wanted to kick people in the face for about 2 years when they'd eat a piece of cake in front of me. sit on my lap and eat a piece. Oh, this is so good. Really? Yeah, so, but as I worked the steps, as I was took service commitments and program, as I connected with you and stopped thinking I was different or I could figure it out or I could, you know, get this, and just did the footwork, the cravings and the obsession waned. And I know for sure that even if I have a craving today, with your help, I can fight it. But if I take one bite of that alcoholic food, I'm done. I'm toast. Like there's no fight. And I have a lot of people call me after they've eaten the alcoholic food, begging for help. And I always say, please call me before you take the first bite of that food, and I can help you more. I mean, I can still try to help you after you take it, but please call me before. Try it. Try it once. And I'm grateful I was willing to do that when I was new, because it's hard.
Thank you so much. Can you talk a little bit about the first time you did the fourth step and how you moved through it? Like, did it take you a year? Did you do a little bit every day? Did you, I don't know. How did you dredge those things up?
You know, I'm actually getting tested for ADHD right now, and I'm pretty sure I have it. And ever since college, I wait, and then adrenaline helps me do my best work. And I don't recommend it. I'm just saying that's my experience. And the first time I worked the steps with my first sponsor was the first person who answered the phone when I was 3 days abstinent, and my friend's kids I was babysitting wanted to bake cookies, and I was freaking out. So that was my first sponsor. And I waited until the week I was meeting with Sandy and got it all on paper. But I think the most important thing for me in that first fourth step was including myself and the harm I'd done myself and the resentments I had towards myself and the fears I had about everything that I shoved down with food. And walking through that stuff with her. Bless you. And thank God for sponsorship. Like, I can't fix my broken brain with my broken brain. I have to have somebody else walk me through that. And I think there's this perfectionism in our disease that's like, oh, I have to do it exactly right or I'm going to get in trouble. Like, there aren't any grades on our fourth step. We have to do it to the best of our ability where we are in that point in our recovery. But the more honest I've gotten with myself, the more freedom I have on the other side. And some of the most shameful parts of my fourth step have helped the women I sponsor the most when they're afraid or ashamed, and I get to share it with them. Did that answer your that help? Okay, awesome. Yes.
Hi, you talked about self-hatred and the not so nice things you said in the mirror before, during, whatever. What is it like now, or what do you do differently today?
You know, the first thing, so the question was about the self-hatred and the horrible things I said in the mirror to myself. In the beginning, just not using my out loud voice, like those thoughts were still in my head, but I didn't verbalize "you stupid fat bitch" in the mirror out loud. And I think it was Gail, my second sponsor, that had me look in the mirror and say "I love you" until I meant it. Whoo! That is not for the faint of heart, because I didn't mean it for a long time. And I looked in the mirror and said, "I love you," until I meant it. And just blocking eyeballs. And I also have a picture of little Kimmy, that little 3-year-old girl that got screamed at a lot, on my desk. And anytime I'm beating me up, I look at that picture, that little brown-eyed pixie cut cutie, and I'm like, that's who I'm abusing. And now I get out of the shower and I look in the full length mirror and say, "You are sexy. I would totally do you." And some days I need it, and other days, and other days I don't. Now you know my secrets.
Thank you so much, Ruby. Can you tell me a little bit about your? What do you think the root cause, where did some of it all begin? When did you first realize you were a compulsive overeater, and the relationships in your life, parents or family or whatever?
Whew, so where did the compulsive overeating begin? That this could take like 6.5 hours. The the familial relationship is definitely where, I mean, I think there was the biological thing with being a premature baby and hunger, but I'm not a scientist, so that part doesn't matter. It's the behavior that I have to pay attention to. There's a lot of addiction in my family, and my grandmother was my grandma Ruby that I grew up, you know, in her house when I was little, was definitely a compulsive overeater. But the, like I mentioned earlier, the emotional trauma, like I didn't even call it emotional abuse until last year when I started trauma therapy. I'm like, oh, like screaming in your face and demeaning you and telling your dreams are stupid is emotional abuse? Apparently, yes, it is. And that's where I came, like as a little girl, I just got quiet and tried not to make noise so I didn't piss anybody off. And so in all that anxiety, the food was the comfort and sugar. Like, I chased the ice cream truck up and down the road when I wasn't supposed to be out of the house when I was little. My best friend's family owned a Dairy Queen. I didn't even really like her. Like, everything was soothing and comfort was a good idea, so was it? I'm like, you're an asshole, but I can get a pot fudge sundae. Yeah, but I mean, I just look back from the very earliest age, I was soothing the trauma, and I didn't even know. I had panic anxiety disorder. Like, I was having full-blown panic attacks, racing thoughts. Like, I needed a cupcake and a cocktail, you know, when I was a little kid. And so finally healing that part of myself now, 11 and 12 years into my abstinence, has been super healing. Highly recommend. Take a nap and eat your Wheaties. Yeah.
Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it. So how do you handle going to the events where you can't control who's going to be? Do you have like particular plans or techniques?
So the question is about how do I plan my food when I'm going to events. Well, yesterday I didn't plan very well, and I was a hangry bitch, and I do not recommend what I did yesterday, just waiting. If there's any way for me to find out what is going to be on the, like, I have no shame anymore. I'll call the host of the party and ask them what they're serving. If it's a potluck, I'll bring something I can eat. If it's at a restaurant, I'll look up the menu and figure it out in advance. And I didn't report my food for the last few years because my food was fine, and lately when I've been in so much anxiety and stress, I started seeing myself like make a sexier pick. Like if I'm going to text Darcy, I'm going to text her I'm having the chicken Caesar salad. I'm not going to text her I'm having a cheeseburger and fries. You know what I mean? Like it's just an extra layer of protection to have God and another human being involved in my food decisions. I mean, most places, there's something there I can eat. Like, I used to be such a drama queen about what I couldn't. Like, I can't eat. But there are 8,742 things I can eat, and they're really delicious, and I love. I've also heard people share in meetings, like, their food's really basic, so they don't get triggered. I would jump off a bridge. Like, my food still has to taste good. It just can't be the things that kick in my alcoholic obsession and craving. So, yeah, I've got to be a girl with a plan, or I'm a girl in trouble like I was yesterday. I think I have 2 phone calls of amends to make today. One guy deserved me to be short with him, though. I didn't like his opinion. Did someone else have their hand up in the back? Oh, there you are.
Thank you. I think you mentioned being in a beauty group programs. How do you balance the meeting? Do you have one sponsor that's in the programs? Do you have multiple sponsors? What does that look like?
The question is about being in multiple programs, and I mean, I was in the mothership program first for 10 years, which I had to work the steps and get that honest before I could even take a look at food, my primary addiction, the one I was guarding with all of my might. And I don't believe in sponsoring people in multiple programs. I don't, and I have different sponsors in every program I'm in because I think it gives people too much power. Or, like, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with people that I sponsor. And it's you may not do it exactly the way that I do it, especially with the food. Your abstinence might be different than mine. And what I tell people is, what is calling you and trying to kill you today? Like, what's on fire today? I mean, I'll never leave the first program because that's where my recovery started. The one that seems to get me in the trouble the most and call to me the most is the food. And so I try to get to 2 meetings in each program a week, which is 6 meetings at least. And I'm just better company when I do. So, you know, before I was anything, you know, I would be like, I'm going to work out every day and quit drinking and smoking and eat clean. And I can't do them all at once. I would say one addiction at a time, like one addiction. But I also know people who started their second program, like I had 90 days in AA and came to OA. I'm like, that is freaking awesome. I didn't have to wait 10 years, but I did. So that's just my story. But I say whatever's trying to kill you today, go to that meeting first. That's what I try to do. Anybody else? Yes?
Can you tell us about your meditation practice and how it's evolved?
Sure. How it's ebbed and flowed? He asked about my meditation practice. Meditation changes my life and the way my brain works in a powerful, profound way, because I used to run around going, what's God's will? What's my will? What's God's will? Well, if I don't get quiet, I can't hear God's will. And that's what meditation is to me, getting quiet to get the guidance. Today, I've actually been really on point with my meditation lately, like 15 minutes a day, guided meditation. But there have been periods I don't meditate at all, don't recommend. I'm an addict. This is going great. I feel good. Fuck it, I'm not going to do it today. Like, that's just, that has happened. But I'm a better human when I meditate. That's my experience. Yes. And that's time.